All right.
We're back, and I'm excited to be able to talk into an electric device that works. Reggie, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, that's what we're going to talk about today. Yeah, so anyway, we don't realize how much we depend on electricity, I'll tell you that much. But I'm glad we have it, right, Reg? It keeps us in business. All right. Looking at those needles, and they are bouncing. They are excited to get ready with the podcast. Well, so am I. So let's go. Write it in the book. Episode, this is a cool one, 222. 222. Write it in the book. I'll give you the three S's, and then we'll do the countdown, and voila. The great Toronto will make his podcast magic. If I was a magician, I have the last name for it. All right, here we go. Ready? Star, smile, strong. Okay, here we go. Ready, Reg? Yeah. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcasts. We are there. Don't forget to subscribe to those platforms, and you can rate this podcast. And by all means, if you feel the urge, pass on the word and tell your friends. I want to thank regular listener Craig. I've noticed that he has been doing a nice little personal job of promoting the podcast on his own on his Facebook page, and much appreciated. You can do that too. Send your friends a line. Send them a link. Send them a message. Whatever you do to send them anything, text them, call them, send them smoke signals. Whatever it is you do to get through to your friends, tell them that you listen to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and they should too. And if they aren't, why the heck not? As always, your loyalty and devotion to this podcast is much appreciated, and it's the main reason I do it. Hey, I love radio. I love talking to people and sharing, but if there wasn't anyone out there, it's basically like talking to yourself. So I do like to get feedback from you to know that I'm not just talking to myself. And I certainly have appreciated everybody who on a regular basis sends me messages of either positive or negative. I'll take both, but at least I know you're listening. I don't care what you say about me as long as you're saying something about me. That means I've made some impact on you, negative or positive. I really don't care. As long as you're listening, that's what's important. And if you like what you hear, don't forget, you can go to the WGNradio.com website in the podcast section and go to the prompt for this show, and you will see that all previous 221 episodes are there. They're all there for your podcasting enjoyment, which can mean only one thing. This is podcast number 222. Some older listeners may remember a very cool, very odd, very eclectic network television show in the late 60s and early 70s. I was a little kid. I have vague memories of it. I remember the theme song. I remember the opening sequence. I remember many of the characters. I don't remember many of the plots. I think I was a little too young to really grasp the full depth or meaning of the show or what they were trying to do at the time. I think now in retrospect, I think back at it, this show was called Room 222. Does anybody remember that? Google that. Room 222. It hasn't been on in reruns, I would think, in 40 years. I don't know if I remember even seeing it on its original run, or maybe in reruns in syndication for a while after it ran. But it was about an inner... if I can remember correctly, I'm just going off of memory now because it just reminded me of this. But I think it was kind of a drama, and very low key. It was a very 70s show, very low key, a little humor. But it seemed to be very high minded. It was about an inner city school with a diverse student body and diverse faculty, blacks, whites, men, women. It was a 70s, so you had straight kids, stoner kids, rock and roll kids. It was this great, melting pot of all types of people and influences. And I think the whole idea was that, that this is the kind of society that we're moving toward. It's funny that show actually should come back. They should show someone, whoever has those reruns, should bring that show back. Because I bet you, I don't remember any specific plot lines, but I do know that I guarantee you it would probably be very relevant in today's society for what they were trying to put forth and espousing like 50 years ago. Much of that, the diversity and the different viewpoints and a very progressive mindset, I mean, that was all on that show from what I remember, even as a little kid. And that's what's going on today. So whoever owns the prints and the rights to Room 222, what are you waiting for? I remember the lead actor, the black actor, his character. He was the main teacher. I don't remember his real name. I don't remember him doing anything after that, really. Some pretty well-known character actors were on that show, including Michael Considine, who, if you've watched early 70s TV shows, he was on almost everything. And also a beautiful and effervescent Karen Valentine, with kind of the ultimate 70s hot chick, especially if you were a young kid. And she played a teacher. You can't build many more young adolescent male fantasies than a young hot teacher, right? And I had a chance to meet and interview Karen Valentine back in the mid-90s. I hosted a weekly entertainment-based radio show on a station here in Chicago, WMVP AM 1000. Now it's ESPN, but it was before ESPN owned it. It was AM 1000, and it wasn't all sports at the time. It was a talk radio station, and I hosted a weekly entertainment show called Entertainment Chicago, and she was doing a play here in Chicago. And I had a chance to meet her and interview her, and oh my gosh, she still looked good. She's probably in her mid to early 40s, and she looked great. And I think I had the widest smile on my face for that 25 minutes or 30 minutes, and I was certainly doing my best to flirt with her. Karen Valentine. She's another one. If you never heard of her, or you may remember her, Google her to remember her or discover her. But she was quite the pretty pixie in the 70s, the classic young, pretty 70s woman, no doubt about that. And she played a very progressive role on that show as well. I did not expect to talk about Room 222 at all on this podcast today, but since it is podcast 222, it seems fitting. So there you go. There's my little TV memory for you. And if you don't know what I'm talking about at all, once again, we have the advantage of Google and Wikipedia. So look it up, Room 222. For all I know, there might even be full episodes on YouTube. I know that I'm going to go and Google that when I'm done with this, just to see what's out there. Room 222, a very interesting, original, and eclectic show. For 70s television, I'm surprised even got on the air. It didn't last very long, but it was kind of a hipper, cooler Welcome Back, Kotter, okay? With no Horseshack and no Barbarino, but certainly an interesting cast of students as well as teachers. And wasn't a full-blown comedy. There were moments of subtle comedy, but it was mostly drama, and as I said, it was trying to put forth kind of a liberal-minded, progressive-minded agenda of the coming together of different people and different viewpoints in the world of education. So there you go, Room 222. That's my treatise on Room 222. Enjoy that. What I really want to talk about today is, wow, what a difference a week makes. Sometimes you can say what a difference a day makes, but in this case, what a difference a week makes, because the last week was unbelievable that that I was going through here. In fact, I'm trying to think now. How did I? Oh, I was able. Yes, I did not have. Here's my point. I'm thinking in my head here. Wow, isn't that interesting? You got to hear the inner workings of my mind. I was able to record my podcast last week at home, thanks to the fact that my computer was already charged, and I didn't have to rely on a direct current of electricity, because last week, from Monday through Friday, almost five full days, from Monday at about 3:50 p.m. until Friday at 10:15 a.m., my wife and I were without power. And certainly, I mean, and if you don't know, in the Chicago area last week, last Monday, for only like a two-hour span, it was in and out. There was something called a derecho. And don't you love those weather terms? I mean, we name our hurricanes and our tornadoes, which is great. But then there's all these other different types of weather occurrences that have kind of neat names. Well, this one was a derecho. I mean, hurricane and tornado are kind of cool, and those are ones that we've almost taken for granted. But derecho is apparently a very strong, kind of compressed weather system, not large, not spread out, compact, but it packs a punch, mainly wind, of gusts to over 100 miles an hour, and it just flies through, no funnel cloud, but just this burst of wind that just comes through and leaves. And in many times, because of the fierce strength of these winds, it leaves a lot of destruction in its wake. And it certainly did that in my neighborhood. Now, I remember leading up to last Monday, talk of some possible rain. And that's all there was, you know, talk of some rain on Monday. And so I was out running some errands last Monday afternoon. And it's about 3 o'clock, about 3:20, and I'm on my way home, and I'm driving down a major street, and I'm listening to the radio, and suddenly within the discussion on a certain topic, they break in and say, we've got some major storm news here to break in with. There is a major storm of, you know, 80 to 90 mile an hour winds going to be coming through the Chicago area at this time within the next half hour. And every 2 minutes they're breaking in and they're giving they're plotting and giving the course of this derecho storm that's coming. And ironically, it's coming and almost it's right behind me as I'm driving my car east. It is right behind me. As I'm driving, the road ahead of me is a little cloudy with some sun, you know, peeking through. And as I'm hearing these reports on the radio, I look in my rearview mirror and it is black as night. It's like 10 o'clock at night behind me. And in front of me, it's 3 p.m, partly cloudy, looks fine. So it was almost very Twilight Zone like to begin with, to see these two, these two personalities of weather, one in front of me and one behind me. Now I'm wondering, how far behind me is that? And maybe I'm going to beat this. At least I'll get in time, you know, but it's clearly coming. And really, maybe it's going to pass me by. You know how it is. We hear all these weather forecastings and these weather warnings. And even to this day, even though I have to say that weather forecasting 30 or 40 years ago was very hit and miss because of the technology that was available. But in today's world, with the technology that we have, they don't miss very often. And even if they do miss in their forecast, they don't miss 100%. They may miss on the, you know, the severity of a storm. But usually if they say a storm's coming, it does come. Every so often it blows over or it weakens. And sure, I mean, nobody's perfect. But I have to say that I've just noticed over the last 15 or 20 years with the advance of overall technology that we've had in our society that weather forecasting has most likely benefited greatly by that. And it seems to be a lot more accurate than it used to be. But sadly, there's a lot of us who are a little older who still remember the days when it was kind of hit and miss. And so we, even though weather forecasting, I believe, has really turned a corner and become very, you know, as accurate as we could expect, I would think, at this point, we still remember the days when it was kind of hit and miss. And they would forecast huge storms, whether it was rainstorms or tornadoes or snowstorms of 20 inches, and then nothing would happen. Or they would predict tornadoes and hurricanes and nothing would happen. And there's enough people who remember those days that when they hear the gloom and doom of a forecast of a big storm coming, we still revert back, even though the proof is in front of us. And we know that weather forecasting is a lot more accurate. We still hark back to those days when they used to be hit or miss and we would rather not go through a storm, right? So we rationalize. Once again, I love the human animal, right? We rationalize. Well, you know, they're always wrong, even though we know they're not really anymore. And we hope that they're wrong. And many times that hope really gets you in trouble, especially people that are in areas where tornadoes or hurricanes are expected to hit. And they're told to evacuate and they don't. And sure enough, it hits right like it was supposed to. And these people not only suffer massive property damage, but in many cases, they barely survive. And in many cases, they don't survive. And a lot of that, I think, has to do with this almost stubborn or this denial and this reverting back to a time when, oh, those weather people don't know what they're talking about. I really believe in 2020, they do know what they're talking about. They may not hit exactly, but they're rarely completely wrong because the sophistication of the technology shows where these storms are and is tracking their movement, and it's no guesswork, and there's more. You know, now more variables are taken into consideration through the computer and technology that they never could do before. So, yeah, you know what? From now on, folks, believe the weatherman more than you don't. Because if you do believe the weather person more than you don't, you're going to be in better shape. That's what I believe. That's just through my own observation. So, as I said, I'm driving my car last Monday. And there are these predictions of this 80 to 90 mile an hour storm, this derecho, that's going to blow through exactly where I'm driving and exactly where I live. And yes, there is a part of me in the back of my mind that says, well, maybe it won't. Even me, right? I just gave you that big stump speech and even I'm denying it. So, you know, I'm no better or no worse. But at least as I'm driving, the dark clouds behind me seem far enough away that I might be able to get home in time and miss the effects of this storm. But I guess I didn't really know how fast an 80 to 90 mile an hour storm can move. And I've learned just how fast it can move firsthand. I was so nonchalant about this that rather than just heading straight home, I'm hearing the warnings throughout my drive home. I'm seeing the dark clouds behind me, but I'm still seeing those nice puffy cumulus clouds and little peaks of sun in front of me. So I'm driving toward the light. You know, if I was driving the other direction, I probably would have had a whole different perspective. Like, whoa, look at what I'm driving into. I better get home and fast. But I'm driving into sunlight, the light of the tunnel, not in the darkness. The darkness is behind me. I know it's moving toward me, but I really don't think it's going to overcome me, right? I'm in a car driving 30 or 40 miles an hour, right? So I don't know how far back that wind is, but I think I've got a pretty good head start on it. So much so that I even decide to make a stop to get some gas. Now, if you've listened to me with any regularity, you know that I'm a little anal on things. During this pandemic, for instance, I haven't been a hoarder of essentials like toilet paper or paper towels or other kind of things like that that have been hoarded by people and the stores are still out of them, which doesn't make any sense to me 5 months later. There are still empty shelves in a lot of stores with paper towels. I mean, come on. It's been 5 months. The supply chain has to have filled in after 5 months, right? But at least the stores I'm going to, they don't have them. I went to a store the other day to get some paper towels. Out of paper towels. Completely out of paper towels. Almost 6 months later after the March hoarding? Come on. What's going on here? Paper towels are not gold here. We shouldn't have to barter for them. But I was so confident and so unafraid, I guess, as I saw the light in front of me, the bright skies in front of me, that I stopped for gas. I didn't even really need gas. I don't like to run out of things. If I run out of things at my home, since I'm the guy that shops for most of the time for most of those essentials, if I run out of anything, if we run out of anything, I always feel like I failed in providing a good stockpile. I never want to run out. So I always have much more, or at least some more than I need. I always at least have double what I need. So then if I run out of one, there's one waiting for me. So when I buy my favorite air freshener, as I've talked about many times, my beautiful, delicious and sweet-smelling Cashmere Woods by Glade, that is my preferred home scent, I will buy 8 cans or 10 cans and at one time. And so this way, we never run out. And we get down to 5 cans, that's when I buy the next 10. I have two containers of kitty litter. Actually, 2.5. But never just one. When I break into the new one, I go and buy a new one. I already have one sitting. So we always have at least 1.5 in waiting. So we never run out of kitty litter. I have 7 cases of cat food for Grimsby the cat. So we never run out of cat food. She will never go hungry and never have to hold it in, right? We will never run out of our scent. I have paper towels. Now I'm a little behind here. I'm a little worried. I have to go out today, in fact, to get some paper towels because of when I went to the store the other day and I expected to buy another, jumbo, 12 pack of paper towels, I would be all set. Even though I have 10 in the house, we go through them and I don't want to be without them. So I go and get another 10 pack or 8 pack or 12 pack, whatever it is. So I'm a little on edge right now. If I feel a little jittery, if my voice sounds a little jittery, it's for no other reason than that I don't have at least one unopened pack of at least 8 or 10 paper towels in the basement ready to go in case something happens. That's why I'm jittery. I buy 12 soaps, right? The package of soaps, 12 of those. when I already have about eight sitting, and it's so I have a 12-pack waiting unopened while I have, I'm working still through eight. Yeah, that's me. I don't like to run out. So I always have, I'm not hoarding, I'm just preparing. And it makes it makes life easier because I never have to worry like, oh my gosh, we're running out of this, we're running out of that. Never have to make one of those last minute runs to the store for something because I'm always staying one step ahead. And so even with the gas situation, as I'm driving home, as this derecho is raging behind me and looking to overcome me down on as I travel east, I still say I'm going to stop for some gas. And you know what? I had a half a tank. I just went through a half a tank. But I like when I hit half, I fill it up. I don't go to the end. And I'll tell you why. As I said many times, I make mistakes and as much as anyone else and perhaps even more. But what I try not to do is make the same mistake twice. And I have, sadly, and I've learned my lesson because I have made the same mistake twice of not in the past of not filling up. And I have run out of gas on more than one occasion. And I've been fortunate where it's happened. And I've been fortunate to be able to, so I haven't been stranded somewhere out in nowhere's land. I've at least been close to gas stations. I'm responsible enough to know I'm running out of gas. I've always run out of gas on my way to a gas station. But I always kick myself because I pass many of them, even though I know I'm on E and getting to the bottom there. I've passed gas stations to get one closer to my house. And then, the reality of that is, what are you doing? How stupid is that? So what? Get your gas wherever it was. Even if it's 10 cents more than it usually costs, you're going to run out of gas. And then you're going to have a drama. Then you're going to have a situation. Why do that? And I've done that enough times, more than I should have, that I've now learned the lesson. That when it's halfway, I overcompensate. When I'm at half a tank, that's when I fill up. I rarely fill up at almost an empty tank anymore. And that's been, I would say, around the last 15 years. And when my wife, we've downsized to one car now because of the pandemic, because she's not driving to work. But when she had her own car, sometimes I'd have to drive her car for whatever reason. Mine was getting fixed or anything. And I would look at the gas gauge and like, oh, because it was all the way down to like a quarter of a tank. I didn't even know what to do. I didn't even know if the car would work. Does a car work with a quarter of a tank left? I don't even know anymore because my car never gets to below half. And I'd get into her car and I would immediately drive to the gas station just so I can feel safe. And then I would come home and say, wow, you only had a quarter of a tank left. And she's like, so? I'm like, oh, quarter of a tank to me is empty in my world now because I'm at half a tank and boom. So and in the midst of this major storm on its way, being the play-by-play on the radio every 5 minutes, now it's moving into this town, and it's moving in this direction. And I'm like, wow, that's right behind me. Yeah, I see it behind me. But I still felt the need to stop and get gas because at that point, in front of me, it's still a bright kind of sunny day. Well, let me tell you this, gang. An 80 to 90 mile an hour wind storm, it moves some tail. It moves. Wow, does it move. When I pulled in to the gas station, it was still sunny. Well, not sunny, partly sunny, but bright. It was still bright, no rain. You would never know that a major storm was within literally minutes, if not seconds. By the time I pulled in and it was, a bigger gas station, so a lot of the pumps were full. So I had to drive around one time. They were all the pumps were taken. I had to drive around one time, and as I was on my way to my second time around, I got about halfway through and an aisle opened. And as I pulled in, so now, you know, I'm not paying attention to the atmosphere around me, to the weather around me, because now I'm focused on what pump is open and also cars, you know, coming in and out in these gas stations. You know, it's kind of crazy between the car washes and the convenience stores and the pumps. It's like an obstacle course. It feels like one of the, remember the driving films you'd see when you were in driver's ed and you'd be, you know, in that simulator and they're driving along and all of a sudden in the film, you know, a kid on a bike would fly by and they would say, did you identify that possible distraction or accident? And hopefully you hit the brakes. You didn't hit the kid on the bike. Did you identify that possible hazard? Well, I hope so. I know a lot of the kids sitting next to me on either side of me didn't. There was a lot of kids hit on bicycles in my simulator class. Driver's ed, I remember that. I was always quick on the brake. I'm kind of proud of that. I didn't hit anybody. but I was so focused on the being in the gas station and getting a pump and watching out for cars backing in or shooting out from somewhere. The very busy thing that I wasn't really now paying attention to the weather behind me. And so I pulled in to the spot. And so now I stopped the car. I have to, you know, pull the latch to open up the gas tank. So from when the time I pulled in, drove around once around the pumps, and then began my second time around, got halfway through and found an open aisle. All of this couldn't have taken more than a minute and a half to 2 minutes. To when I opened the latch inside, which opens my gas tank. To when I went to open my driver's side door. If there were 2 minutes that passed, that was a long time. Well, all of a sudden, as I go to open the door won't open. And I'm like, did I park too close? Am I hitting something? Why isn't the door open? And as I pick up my head for the first time, because I've been kind of just focused at eye level, I didn't look around, and now I'm looking for gadgets, and I'm opening doors. So my attention is not really, hasn't really been in the windshield, per se, or at least around me. It's not peripheral. I've been much more focused for the last 2 minutes. This door won't open. And I'm like, what? There's resistance to the door. And so I finally push it open and I lift my head and it is 8 o'clock at night around me now. It is that partly sunny sky with the puffy cumulus clouds, that's gone. It is dark. There is blowing rain. I'm seeing signs, bending from across the street. There was some construction going on. There's some building materials now just flying through the air. You ever saw the movie Twister? That's what it reminded me of. This hard-driving, blowing wind with rain and dark clouds, so much so that I can't even open the door. When I get it with just a casual open, now I'm really pushing. I do open it. I get 1 foot out. I'm still thinking I'm going to get gas during this. That's how silly I am. Well, because I'm under, you know, the pump is under, a little awning, right? So that's no problem. I was so oblivious, even though I was warned of this and saw the dark clouds behind me. I got about half my body halfway out and the door is closing in on me again. I'm like, holy. And I'm like, okay, I think I should, you know what? I don't really need this gas. So I slam the door. I close the door. Now, I mean, it is pouring rain. And now I have to, you know, navigate out of this potentially dangerous parking lot. As I said, there's still these obstacles of people coming in and out. You know, I have to turn into traffic, and then, you know, thankfully I'm only about 5 minutes away from home. So then my phone rings, And my wife is like, where are you? Because this store, I said, yeah. I said, don't worry, I'm 5 minutes away from home. Well, wow. In that 2 minutes from when I pulled into the gas station to another 5 minutes on my way home, this derecho is at full speed blowing right over me and right into my neighborhood. And as I'm, you know, at stoplights, and now I'm turning and I'm driving now down this, you know, I was so oblivious. I should have driven down, you know, streets that were a lot more populated, but I was trying to get home as quick as I can, taking my usual shortcuts. But a lot of my usual shortcuts take me through some forest preserve kind of areas. Okay, how dumb was that, right? Why would you drive through a forest preserve area filled with trees when there's an 80 to 90 a mile an hour storm hitting you with rain and especially this horrendous wind? Why would you go through a heavily wooded tree-lined area, Jim? I don't know. You know, once again, a lot of times, don't you, when you're in your own neighborhood, don't you feel like sometimes you don't even remember making turns? It's almost like you were in a self-driving car. You're so used to driving in one taking one specific route that you almost are oblivious to it. It's almost like you don't even remember doing it. It's just automatic. It's like you're a zombie. And the car is driving itself. And I think that's, even though I saw this, now I'm in the midst of it, of this storm, and I know I have to get home early, I'm still not thinking precautionarily. I'm still thinking my usual route. And my usual route takes me through areas that are like right next to the street, are all heavily wooded, forest preserve. In between, I mean, the road in a few parts is actually cut through the forest preserve, and then there's homes, but there's forest, there's trees on both sides, and I live in a very heavily tree-lined area. So all my, I mean, I guess any route I would have taken could have been potentially dangerous in terms of trees, but if I would have stayed on some of the major streets, I would have been in better shape. But now I was on my tree-lined route for whatever reason, out of pure habit. I didn't even make the decision. The car seemed to make the decision for me. So anyway, I mean, I'm driving now, and it's pouring rain. I could feel the wind. The car is shaking. And sure enough, I go over a set of railroad tracks, and as I'm coming down, you know, it's kind of a big, like a hill of the, you know, the railroad tracks sometimes are kind of elevated. And not far ahead of me is a major branch of a tree that is laying in the middle of the street. Or not in the middle. Yeah, well, yeah, it's in the middle of the street, and it's certainly in my lane. Now, I'm in a two-laner, and it's covering my lane. Thankfully, there's one more lane next to me on the left. Once again, I'm driving in the right lane. How stupid is that, right? I'm driving close to the trees. Once again, completely oblivious, even though I know what's around me. But thankfully, there's a left lane, you know, of traffic going my way. Then there's the traffic going the other direction. And thankfully, there was no one behind. There was no one, you know, behind me or on the side of me, because I had to make a very quick swerve, or I would have just driven head in to this major branch. I would have had major damage to my car, and I didn't have much time to react. But when I did swerve, and when I swerved, as I said, no car next to me, thankfully, but I did just clip with my back tire. I think I must have run over the end part of this major limb. So I didn't completely clear it. And my car did go up and down, and it came down with a thud. And I just, now I'm driving the car. I've only got about a half a mile to go to my house, but now I'm thinking, oh my God, what damage has been done to the side or the back of my car after I sort of hit that thing? Because I hit hard. And I'm just imagining that I've got some damage on the back or the side of my car. And if you recall a few podcasts ago, I just told you that I had to get my car redone. I had someone, in a parking lot, the door must have scraped my car. So I just had the car done about 2 months ago, where I had to take it to a body shop, get a rental car, all that rigmarole. And I'm like, oh, 2 months later, month and a half later, here we go again. So I finally get home, and I'm in my neighborhood. And as I'm driving through my neighborhood, there are major tree limbs just laying all over the street. It looks like a tree-lined disaster area. Not a lot of debris, but just trees and branches and limbs, major limbs cracked off, laying everywhere, all over, on people's lawns, some in the street, thankfully not blocking, but in trees, and leaves blow. I mean, it was just major. This was and now the pouring rain. When I get and I turn onto my street, I looked at this at the far end of my street, and there is a huge. I couldn't have time to look. It was either a huge, huge limb. We have a lot of old big trees in my neighborhood that was completely blocking the street, or it looked like an entire tree went down when I first saw it. But it was completely blocking the street. It was angled. I mean, you couldn't even drive. The street was literally blocked by this giant limb, but I wasn't driving that far. So I turn onto my driveway. Now, I remember my wife called me minutes before this thing had, or minutes after this thing hit, just to find out where I was. So now I pull into my driveway and I click my my garage door opener, and it doesn't work. And so now I'm like, oh, not only am I in the middle of this, not only am I afraid to get out of the car to see what damage this tree limb did, and not only am I going to get drenched, even though I don't have to even run that far from the driveway to the back door because our garage is detached, but now we don't have any electricity, obviously, because the garage door isn't opening. So now it's like, oh, and we've had two outages in the last couple of months that they didn't last too long. One lasted 45 minutes, which is no big deal. One lasted maybe 2.5 hours. Inconvenient, but no big deal. But this storm is still happening at the time. And as I said, as I'm looking around, I mean, it looks like, the end of the world, especially with all these trees everywhere. And we've got a lot of trees on my, my property in my backyard. We have one big tree with all those kind of green nuts. I've cut one major tree down, and we have two in the front, and so our front grass was just loaded with a lot of big branches. No major limbs, but just a lot of branches completely littering the front of our yard in the front. And then went into the back. Nothing, thankfully, in the back so far, except now I know my home has no electricity. So I come in, and my wife's like, yeah, she said, in fact, right after I hung up the phone with you, we lost electricity. So my house didn't even withstand like a minute of this storm, and it lost power. So I'm not sure what grid we're on, but we seem to lose power fairly easily, at least in the last couple of months, and I don't know why. Now, the kicker of all this, so now we're in, the house. I mean, it's 4 o'clock, so it's not dark yet. It's dark because of the storm, but it's not dark because the sun is gone. And it's pouring rain, and we're in the kitchen now, looking out in the backyard, just seeing this and hearing this. And unbelievably, throughout this storm, the garbage men came. Still picked up our garbage. Kudos to you guys. But all of a sudden at around 4:30, quarter to five, when we go to actually in the front to see that the garbage men are there, we come back into the kitchen, and my wife notices she went upstairs and she looks and she goes, oh my God, a major limb off of our tree in the backyard has fallen into the neighbor's backyard. It's right next to their garage door. And I'm like, oh, gosh, well, did it hit their garage? I mean, is there any damage? She said, well, I don't know. It doesn't look like it. But it's a major limb, and it's right in front of their garage. So now, you know, I'm like, oh. We had a neighbor's tree hit our fence on the other side last fall, which did some damage to our wooden fence to the point that, you know, I had to get the limb removed. I had to get some damage, or, you know, our wooden fence repaired. And I had to call our insurance. This is an interesting thing. If anybody doesn't know this, this is a little, I guess, this act of God clause. Look it up. I'm not crazy. You would think that if your tree did damage to your neighbor's house in any way, that it would be your fault. But if it's in a storm and the tree happens, and the tree limb falls and does damage to your neighbor's property, you are not liable. You or your insurance are not liable. Their insurance is. It's called the Act of God Clause. And it doesn't seem to make sense on its face, but I guess it does. And so while, you know, I had to pay, or, you know, through my insurance, I had to state a claim on my insurance when my neighbor on one side of my house did damage to my fence. Even though my tree now had fallen, it wasn't going to be my liability. So I guess I'm even Steven, right? I don't know. But this was a major limb that came down. And so now we're watching it, and slowly the rain stops, and slowly the wind ceases. And just as they predicted, my wife was like, oh my God, this storm is terrible. And I said, I got news for you from what I'm hearing on the radio in the car. This is going to be all done by 6 o'clock, and the sun is going to be out again, and it's going to look like a beautiful summer evening. And, you know, there'll be no trace of this, at least weather-wise. Now, the havoc and the debris and the damage that storm will have caused while it blew through here for 2 hours certainly will be remaining. But by looking at the sky or the weather, you won't even know what happened. And sure enough, once again, as I'm talking about the accuracy of weather predictions, by 6 o'clock, by 5:45, it was sunny. It was calm. There was no rain. You would have never known that this major, scary 80 to 90 degree mile an hour wind storm with blowing rain and that did so much destruction blew out tree limbs, blew out our electricity. You would never even have known it ever happened. It would seem like another beautiful, weather-free, carefree summer afternoon. But wow, was it just the opposite in terms of what it left in its wake. It did exactly what they said. It came through, it did its damage, and it went on to the next place. And so here we were now with our backyard filled with branches and everything blown over, front yard filled with big branches as well. Next door neighbor with one of our major limbs blocking, you know, in the middle of their driveway right by their garage door. I'm still hoping that isn't any damage to their garage roof or their garage door. Once again, not that I'd be liable, but I just feel bad, right? It's my tree. And I think we're going to get some of those limbs trimmed now, especially the ones that are leaning in their yard, because I really don't want that to happen again. Well, thankfully, the tree limb didn't do any major damage, so that we got lucky. It fell. If it had to fall, it fell in the exact perfect spot it could have fallen to do no damage. Apparently, a couple of days later, my neighbors discovered that a small branch had, you know, I guess with the force of this thing coming down, lodged itself in one of the shingles of their roof. But it didn't, I mean, it's just a hole in that shingle. So hopefully they don't have to do any major repairs or anything like that. So we got off lucky on that. But I don't want to make the same mistake twice, as I said earlier. So we're going to cut some of these other big limbs that are, you know, facing into their yard so that we can do as much as we can to prevent that from happening. But we were able to clean all the debris from the trees that had fallen in our yard, front and back. But we couldn't turn back on the electricity, and neither could our electric company, for almost 5 days. And so here we were. One of the errands I had done was picked up some food from the grocery store that now I was going to put into our, when by the time I got home, our refrigerator was already shut off. Now, the rule is that you can probably keep, food in your refrigerator for about up to 12 hours. And then after that, the refrigerator loses the cool that it had before it went out, and your food is in danger of spoiling, whether it's milk or any kind of meats, or obviously dairy products, yogurt, butter, you name it. So, I mean, I put the food I bought into the refrigerator, but I was already expecting, based on the severity of this storm, what I had seen driving around, this was no small storm. And then we had a radio that we were able to play, and by all accounts, when my wife called that was a battery operated, and by all accounts, when my wife called in to report our outage, the electric company gave us some updates, and there were 500,000 customers in the greater Chicago area that were without power. So this was clear that now this was going to be, I thought, a multi-hour, if not multi-day problem, because with that many people out, I mean, the burden on the electric company to get everybody back up online was going to be horrendous. And it was. And then we found out that within our area where our house was, there were only 34 people that were without power. I don't know if we were the 35th or not. So then I'm saying, oh my gosh, if we're in a triage situation. If they're going to look at how, where to send the crews first in terms of need, they're going to want to try to get as many people online as fast as possible. So they're going to go to areas where they can flick a switch and hopefully get 20 or 30 or 40,000 people on at one time. They're not going to be worried about 34 people. And sure enough, I mean, in a triage situation in a hospital, the comparison I made was, we're right now in a situation where there are hundreds of people with heart attacks or with their chests wide open bleeding at the emergency room, and we're walking in with a cut on our finger that might get infected. So who do you think's going to be getting the attention? And so we got various updates, as we called in to find out from the electric company. The first one was that night. First, they said they couldn't give us an estimate. And my wife was the eternal optimist. If you know me, I'm Mr. Realism right off the bat. I survey the situation, and while I'm trying to be optimistic, I'm also more realistic than optimistic. And I said, this is a multi-day thing. This is at least, if today's Monday, we'll be lucky if it's Wednesday, maybe Thursday. We'll be lucky. Because we are way down on the priority list based on common sense. Once again, I certainly wanted my my electricity to come on, but I was being realistic in terms of where we had to have, been on that list, on the severity of it. There were other areas that certainly were going to take precedence over us, and I was aware of that. Now, my wife initially was, don't forget, our power went out at about 4. Based on previous outages, she even extended it. And, the last outage was about 2.5 hours. So she said, I think by 8:30, the electricity will be on. Of course, I laughed out loud. And I said, well, on what day? 8:30 on what day? She's like, today. Okay, we'll see. Well, needless to say, 8:30 came and went in a blip. And we were still in the dark. We were now in full candle mode. Our living room and our kitchen, we had candles. And we had more candles on than if you watch one of those bad Hallmark romance movies when they have a seduction scene in the living room and somebody's trying to seduce someone else. There's candles everywhere. That's what our house looked like. It looked like a Hallmark seduction movie scene. So we got the candles. We got a battery-operated radio, but that's all we got. I mean, that's it. We can't open the refrigerator. Our cat's wondering what the hell's going on. And it's very quiet in our neighborhood. And we're just basically now in survival mode. You know, we've got some dry food around, and we're hopefully going to be able to use some of the food, at least, that we had. But, you know, by tomorrow morning, I'm assuming we're going to have to empty out the refrigerator, and we're going to have to go and get some ice and fill some, you know, coolers and go get some other food and use ice for the next couple of days. And that's what we did. We lived out of a cooler for the last 2 or 3 days. After that, we did have to throw out all, pretty much everything in the refrigerator, except some of the soft drinks. But aside from that, everything pretty much went out. And we sat for several days. Thankfully, the weather, the great break we got was at night. While it was warm during the day, the nights were cool. Because I usually have my fan blowing in my face all night. Well, no fan. But thankfully, the nights were cool. We were able to open the window and get some natural breeze in. And so for those 4 days, even though we had just been recently in a heat wave around here where there was great humidity during the day and in the evening, the gods shined upon us. They said, well, you know what? We're going to knock out your electricity, but we're not going to put you in a complete horrible situation here. We're going to give you some cool nights so at least you'll be able to sleep. So at least we had the windows open in the evening. And without my fan, nature provided a little air conditioning. So we were able to sleep and we weren't just, you know, in a ton of humidity in the day and the evening. But the kicker was, this was the thing that was most aggravating. And I, once again, I have no qualms about the electric company. I know the pressures they were under. But at the same time, you're sitting there with no electricity now for 2 or 3 days. You've already been quarantined for 5 months. And now you add this on, you know, and then to add to that, one of the days, I believe on Wednesday or Thursday, we were awoken to the sound of our street being completely torn apart with bulldozers and, you know, at 7:30. So we had our normal COVID quarantine situation already in place for the last 5 months, which is, you know, added a little stress to the situation. Now we had no electricity, and every prediction we had as far as when we get it back from the was pushed. The initial one was this. My wife called in at 11 o'clock on Tuesday morning, right? And they said, we now have an estimate of when your power will return. This is a recording. Your power return at 3 p.m. And we're like, 3 p.m.? Great. It's 11 o'clock now in the morning. We could do 3 p.m. standing on our head. We just did like 12, 15 hours. So, wow, it's going to be on by 3. That'll be less than 24 hours. Thank God. Great. Right? Until we heard the rest of the message, which was, the estimate now for your power return will be 3 p.m. on August 15th. Well, I forget the dates. I think that's maybe tomorrow. I said, well, that's not too bad, I guess. That's tomorrow. My wife goes, no, that's Saturday. I'm like, Saturday? Today's Tuesday. They're already predicting Saturday? Note to anyone who is passing on information, don't bury the headline. When you tell somebody you're going to pick them up on a certain day at a certain time, you say the day first and then the time, right? Don't you say, yeah, I'll pick you up on Saturday at 2 o'clock. I'll pick you up at next Thursday, August 12th at 2 p.m. You say the date first. That's the important one. And then the time second. You don't say the time first and the date second, especially when I'm hanging on this news of when is my electricity come back. And you don't tell me the time first and then say, oh, and by the way, on Saturday. So when they say 3 o'clock, we think our power's going to be on within 4 hours. We're dancing. We're throwing a party. We're setting a parade up. And then there's this pause, and then we are completely driven down into the depression that says 3 o'clock on August 15th. Didn't even say the day, like the day, the name of the day. I mean, if I don't have a calendar, I mean, how do I know what on August 15th is? And I didn't know. My wife did. She goes, you know, that's Saturday. Today's Tuesday. So we're going to be out of power at their estimate for 4 days more. Please, from now on, ComEd and everyone else giving directions. Whenever you're talking about estimates on time, especially for a service that is needed, don't say the date first. Don't say the time first. Say the day first. That's the way we always normally say it. Don't tease me and then disappoint me or anger me. It's the next possible, according to our estimates, your power will be restored on August 15th by 3 o'clock. That's the way. Not 3 o'clock, pregnant pause, August 15th. Not the way to do it. And throughout the next several days, the estimates kept moving backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards. It was obviously clear we're just going to have to wait. And all of a sudden, at 1 minute, it was just going to pop on by surprise. And that's basically what happened. The last estimate we had was Friday at 3 p.m. So we're resigned to that, and I'm expecting now it's probably going to be Saturday, right? Because it's been different times throughout the times. And so I'm just expecting, you know, that's what's going to happen. So I'm sitting in the backyard about 10 o'clock in the morning. My wife comes out, and we're just kind of sitting. Once again, a nice, beautiful day. And all of a sudden, as I'm looking, I'm seeing the electrical poles. I hear a choir of angels as I see a workman in a cherry picker up at the top of a electric pole about two poles away from our house. And I go, oh, hey, 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 look at this. And the cherry picker, you know, was white as well. So that was a good sign, you know, optimism. He went there, he unscrewed something, he put a new one on. My wife ran the house and she goes, it's back on. And I'm sitting there going, okay, I hope that all they didn't do was just unplug this one thing, because that took about 5 seconds. I hope to restore our power, it took several hours of some main thing, and then the final piece was just replacing this one little piece. Because if it just took 2 minutes, like I saw, why couldn't you have driven past? You come over on Wednesday and give me the thing, and I'll climb up in the cherry picker and change it. That's all it took. So hopefully there was more back work that was needed to be done, and there were lines down, and then this, what I saw was the final piece of a much bigger puzzle, because if it was just that, it wasn't worth waiting for. But it was pretty funny to think how we lived for it. We were cooking some of our food on our fire pit. The land was feeding us. I felt like a pioneer for a couple of days. We were using our fire pit as our stove. Thankfully, our water still worked, and toilets, everything, that was no problem. It was amazing how through behavioral routine, as I said about driving a car, it was amazing how you'd walk into a room and just by complete instinct, by complete routine, you'd see a dark room and you'd automatically turn on a light switch. Even though you knew that you had no power, you still turned a light switch on. And every time we did it, we got to start going, we went, light switch! To let each other know that we made a mistake. And I'm not sure if some of these lights were on. I wasn't in the house when the lights went out, so I'm not sure what lights were on and what lights were off. But when the lights went back on, several rooms of the lights were on, so I'm not even sure if we remembered to shut some of the light switches off after we mistakenly turned them on when we had no power. But we were certainly living a Spartan life. We had to go to a relative's house to charge our phones one time. The other times to charge our phones, we went into the car and ran the car and used our car charger. And we had a battery operated radio. So we were, you know, we had flashlights. So we were prepared. We had our candles. We had our flashlights. We did the best we could, but it was certainly an experience. It was certainly the longest I have ever been in my life without electricity, going back to childhood. I would not recommend it to anybody. You realize in that situation just how dependent you are on electricity and how so many things that we take for granted are electrically run. And you go, oh, and how many times you'd open the refrigerator for food when you know there was nothing in there. I mean, that was the most interesting part. Was just doing these kind of reflex actions that you knew once you did them, you went, oh, what am I doing? Duh. But you're so used to it. I shaved using the daylight as much as I can and a flashlight, opening up all the windows. Thankfully, as I said, it was sunny. But yeah, it was a very interesting experience. Sadly, by Friday, we were actually building a new routine of living without electricity, which was kind of strange. But I'll tell you, once it went back on, it was so nice to fall right back into your old routines. And it happened very quickly. Oh, Thomas Edison, Tesla, Marconi, all you electric guys, thank you so much for creating electricity. You don't realize how dependent you are, how nice it is to hit a switch with not even thinking about it and have light. How nice it is to plug something on, hit an on button, and have it work and provide the service that you want. We are so dependent, especially in today's world with all these electrical gadgets. We are so dependent on electricity. You don't know until you don't have. But all I can say is the killer of the whole thing was our next door neighbors across the street. Not next door, but across the street. They had electricity. So while we were in the dark for 4 days, they weren't. And they weren't trying to show any sympathy, because at night they'd have their porch lights on. You could see the glare of their television through the windows. They even had some night lights on. It was almost as if they were mocking us from across the street, like, ha ha, we have it and you don't. That was probably the worst part of the whole thing. I mean, I woke up at 3 in the morning one time, look out the window, and I'm seeing street lights on across the street, not on our side. I'm seeing porch lights on. I'm seeing night lights. I'm seeing electricity being used and enjoyed. But also, I felt like it was being flaunted. I felt like I was being mocked. We were this small little group of 34 people. I'm not sure what the extent it was, who didn't have power in our neighborhood. Our neighbors on each side of us, on our side of the street, didn't. But when I looked across the street every night, it just added to the aggravation to say, 200 feet from there, why can't I be living on that side of the street? So anyway, that was my electrical odyssey for 4 days. And I'll leave you with this phrase, because I couldn't help singing this song throughout the 4 days, the great Genesis song. Turn it on again. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Don't forget, every Monday a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe and rate this podcast. But most of all, tell your friends that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Send them a link. Send them a message. Send them the good word of the fun stuff that's happening right here at Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Your loyalty and devotion is much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode 222. I'm Jim Tarano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen. And fully plugged in.